Section 9, Article 8. Section 1A, Article 8, does make sense with go and petition your government, whatever branch it may be, which includes the courts through lawsuits, is a power given. Basically, what I've heard is that if I petition and the county ignores me, I don't have any remedy. But what happens if a court does what they want? As a violence, I think it's there.
When the latter has the right to appeal, the former you don't.
Well, we have different procedures, though, in the political realm. Those people have the right to show up at a budget hearing, follow it all the way through, get active, voice their opinion before the tax is adopted, before what items are going to go into a budget. They have the right to review their elected officials when it comes to election time, to seek a constitutional amendment, not through only the legislature, but there is a procedure under our Constitution that the taxpayers get one going. But once, you know, in the appeal process with the court, we can only go so far, and then that appeal process is ended. There has to be an ending point someplace in time. And still, they would have the same problem. But I think, basically, the argument that I am presenting does reinforce the right to petition. There's apparently overall in the state, it's going on both politically and judicially. So I think the right to petition is there. It's valid. It's been followed. I know of no place where the right to petition, once you do it, you're guaranteed to get the results you want. That's part of being a democracy and having elected officials. It's an inherent part of the system. True, it's frustrating.
Well, they claim they've been ignored in Ellis County. What's your response to that?
The county commissioners, based on, and I was not involved at the time on this case, but two other partners with the law firm, based on the Attorney General's opinion, said it is illegal, the rollback provision. We have other laws that say elected officials, you can't do something that's illegal. It's almost a small catch-22 situation. True, and we admitted at trial, they performed everything that they needed to do under 26.07. The only thing we were contending was the viability as to a forced election, that the legislature cannot do that in light of what the terms are in the Constitution.
What I'm concerned about is why has it come to that? In the amicus brief, I asked Mr. Luna about the amicus says that there have been 16 such elections in the last 7 years. Why has the issue been forced all of a sudden in Ellis County?
Number one, as to why we're contesting it?
Well, what is it about the situation that the elected representatives...
this is the first case I know of that this petition has even come up in Ellis County since the adoption of the tax code. I've been with this law firm, which specializes in representing appraisal districts, taxing entities, for over 6 years. And in that time of about 100 entities, as I moved around the state with the firm that I've represented, I've only had three involved in a rollback. One has gone to trial, which is this one, and two, which were schools, they went on and held the election because the officials believed they could defeat the petition. In both cases, they did. you know, I think there's something like 2,000 some odd different taxing governments in this state. If we only have 16 within the last couple of years, that's an awful small percentage. That's the only way I know how to respond to that question. So I'm not sitting there on the governing body, nor am I being a taxpayer who's brought one of these protests. The other point I would like to briefly bring up, and which I discussed, is that if you examine the Constitution, we basically have two types of provisions enabling our government to do something. One, I term self-enacting. What the Constitution sets down and specifies the government can do, it can do. The other one is merely an enabling provision. And in my brief, I did point out the distinction in the Constitution between these two within Section 9, Article 8. The four constitutional provisions that tax mainly talks about are self-enacting. The optional tax, which the voters may improve on, requires their action. That's enabling. And this court has had the opportunity, although the tax rates ceilings were different at the time this court heard it in 1937, but in the Sensaba County case that I did quote, this is one among many cases that this court has had the chance to interpret that language. And in that particular case, the Supreme Court stated that Section 9, Article 8, that it deals with two taxing powers insofar as taxes for counties are concerned. An unconditional power to levy, and B, a conditional power to levy. In effect, this court has already decided the issue as to the meaning of the constitutional provisions allowing for the taxation. Unless there's, I don't have any further comments, the court has any questions.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
May it please the court, Mr. Williams, has been submitted to the motion for decision.
Hey, please, court, my remarks will be brief, but I think if this is being recorded, this will be recorded for the first time in something over 2 years that I've agreed with Earl Loomer on something about this case. With all due respect, Justice Hackleton, but briefly, I have, in this case, experienced Earl opening the bag of tricks and using all tricks and maneuvers, and he did raise, I give him credit, the constitutionality of this at the trial court. Now, his memory and mine are distinctly different because I remember the judge saying, I don't think it's unconstitutional. And then, in spite of the brief performance that I did there, he prevailed on the evidence, at least the judge ruled against me, and so then we appealed it. But he did raise that in Denton County, so it was raised belatedly. I suspect Mr. Loomer was satisfied with the record that he had until the opinion came down, so it was not brought up as point of appeal with Mr. Luna, certainly. pardon me. I want to respond just by saying that I'm not asking you to amend the Constitution, and I'm not asking this to be a semicolon court again or anything along that. But the question is raised in that Section 9 of Article 8. What are counties? And I cite to you Crane versus Texas, where in that particular case, the criminal district attorney of Dallas County was held to be a county official, even though he was a criminal district attorney, not the county attorney and anything else, but for that purpose. So the law in Texas is certainly unsettled as what constitutes a county. But certainly if the provisions of Section 9 were to be construed as applying that the county commissioners are the sole representatives of a county, and nothing could be done except by county commissioners, then certainly that last sentence of Section 9, that this shall not be construed as limitation on counties. How easy it would have been to say it should not be considered as a limitation on commissioners' courts, but it does not. Now, Ms. Luna suggests we harmonize the Constitution and then points out these very narrow sections and some sentences taken not out of context, but in their very narrow sense, and suggests this supports its position. I suggest to you that Article 5, Section 3, sets up the jurisdiction of this court, has provisions for the legislature to do certain things, that the legislature can certainly do things to expedite matters through this court and so on, and provide for appeals and what have you. And it's enabling the legislation to further affect the constitutional provisions. I suggest to you that the 2607 tax code is just that on the Bill of Rights. And that is a result of Article 1, Section 29. It's superior to any further provision in Article 2 or the remaining articles. And that is enabling legislation. And I don't think we've ever had this arise in Texas. At least I can find no case that would say that. I come back to the budget process and county commissioners and before portions. And this case is an unruly dog, as a friend of mine would say. Article 1, Section 29, it gets some real interesting reading. I've read that darn thing for 2 years. Well, I really think it's great. I think it offers an opportunity for people to be involved in their government and to allow us to have, my friend Mr. Johnson calls it a sword, his neighboring legislation, to do something with this right to petition. I think we need it. But it's an unruly dog because if we rule that, as Mr. Luna and Mr. McLaughlin want us to do, you're going to have the county commissioners back down here saying, now, it says in the Constitution that we got the right to set this thing based on evaluations. And so we find that the tax codes of the Bureau for Uniform Taxation is kind of out of line because we think we can set the evaluations. That's what they're really asking for. It's an unlimited power here. And so this case is important. It's important to the citizens, and it's important to tell us a little more about county government. It's not brought up here as a facetious case. They've collected 6,000 signatures, and Mr. Johnson's got his line. A courtroom full of them came down here on their own money to see what happens here. And it's the first time any of them been involved in any type of litigation. And they collected 13,000 signatures because they think it's important, and everybody thinks it's important. I'm not suggesting to this court that this is a facetious case. It is important. It's probably the first time that a Texas court will have an opportunity to tell us, is the Bill of Rights in Texas superior to and different from the Bill of Rights in the United States Constitution? Even though we know that certain rights are self-enacting, I know that I had the right to go down and petition my government. But if I had the right to petition my government, do I have the right to have that government be forced to respond as a result of Article 1, Section 2, and my right to amend and abolish? And one of the justices here asked a moment ago about, if you petition, could you change everything? And my response was, and I didn't say it, was, yeah, the people of Texas can come together, whether under this Constitution or any other, and change the government. Mr. Thomas Moore suggested in his utopia that we have a government with judges and no lawyers, and for some particular reason I find that kind of offensive. It kind of puts me out of business, but that might be his right, and maybe they want to do it, and maybe they'll want to abolish lawyers, and maybe they'll want to abolish judges, but they can sure do it, and yes, they can come together, and they can do that. And that's a right they've reserved. Now, I recognize that right has certain limitations on it. I think that some of those limitations were settled at Appomattox on April 9th, 1865. And that makes kind of an interesting question, too, but that's what we're into here, is the very basics and very basis of what our government is.
Counsel.
Yes, sir.
My old law partner used to say American people got just about what they want, and when they don't like what they have, they'll change it. And I kind of agree with that, but the question is, how far can you change it? And it comes to my mind, after having served as a county judge, suppose that the public votes a bond issue to build a new courthouse. The courthouse is under construction, and people don't like the tax that's being imposed upon them to pay for that courthouse. Can they roll back the taxes and not pay for it?
Well, I'm getting ready to file a lawsuit just like that, more or less just like that, but not no particular issue. But I think that there's kind of a time limit on what they were going to do. If you're suggesting to me that we get a courthouse going and we vote it and we vote the bonds and all this, and then somewhere along the project we decide we're going to cut it off, I would say to you that it'd be a foolish mistake on the part of government.
Well, I know, but you're urging that the taxpayers can in fact do that.
If they had enabling legislation under Article 1, Section 29, which would be saying that they'd write a petition, they'd write to change their government, so we had enabling legislation, and the legislature were foolish enough to pass it, I suggest that would be correct.
Well, what do the bondholders do then?
That may be a more interesting question. I'm not certain. I do not disagree with you. Perhaps they sue the county commissioners. I don't know. This is a very unruly dog, as I say. I'm not disagreeing with you about the practical effects of it, but we've asked kind of a speculative question about what might happen in a worst-case scenario, because that's what you have given me, and I suggest to you that if the people of Texas decide they want to abolish government, go live in mud huts and do it, well, then that may be the worst case, but who are we to say they cannot and shall not do that?
You say they can petition if they have enabling legislation?
I would think they don't need enabling legislation to petition, in my judgment. The right of petition is not really at issue here.
You responded to Judge Ray by saying they could have this change if there was enabling legislation.
Well, what I'm saying is I would judge it in this fashion. If there were some legislation that would be so foolish as to allow us to get into these projects, having already voted the bonds, I'm certain we'd have latches and limitations, surely. But I think the people of Texas could abolish all the latches and limitations if they wanted to. I think they could abolish this court. They could do anything they wanted to. The merits of it, he has posed me a worst-case scenario.
About rolling back taxes. Could they roll back taxes without enabling legislation?
No. Well, only by elimination of government, probably. Constitutional convention where we abolish all governments.
So without the statutory enabling legislation, you could not be here on this matter?
There would be nothing. We would present our petitions, and they would do as Ellis County did. They might look at them and say, that's very nice, and your rights under the Constitution have been observed. You've had the right to petition. We've looked at it, and we reject it, yes.
You've asked me that first.
If you didn't know others, I'll thank you very much for your attention this morning.
Thank you, Counsel. Foregoing causes have been submitted on briefs and oral arguments. That concludes the business of the court for the day. The marshal will adjourn the court.
Please rise. Oh, yes, oh, yes, oh, yes. The Honorable Supreme Court of the State of Texas now stands adjourned.